Podcast, KRLV Las Vegas. Now, time for the official Golden Knights Insider Show with Frank Harnish on Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM and 1340 AM.
Down towards the near corner, Cody Eakin goes in shorthanded, feeds in front, score! It's Carlson! William Carlson shorthanded. Miller, right point shot, score! Tipped out in front, and it's 4-0 Vegas. Here comes Lindbergh, going to get ahead of the defense. He pulls it away, goes circle, he shoots, he scores! Oscar Lindbergh! Now a breakaway, here's David Perron, all by himself, the righty down the middle, fakes, backhand score! David Perron, 1-0 Vegas! Here's Hunt, setting up his man in front, Carrier, score! It's his first goal, William Carrier, 7-0 Vegas!
And welcome into the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on a Wednesday. After a rough go of it last night, your Knights dropping a 3-0 decision to the Dallas Stars on home ice. Getting ready to board the plane here in a few minutes and head off to Minnesota and to Winnipeg. Clayton Hamilton here along with Frank Harnish, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, and from the Las Vegas Sun, Jesse Granger. A full house today. How you guys doing today?
Yeah, doing pretty good. Better than the Knights did last night, but I mean, let's be honest about it. It was one bad period and really a real bad final 30 seconds of the second period.
Yeah, what a rough last minute, Ryan, to close the second frame. And all things seem to be going okay. The 1-0 is serviceable, easy enough to come back from, but could not recover from that bad 30 seconds.
No, I mean, and it was tough because everything that the Golden Knights were generating was off the rush. They didn't really have much of a sustained pressure, sustained forecheck in the offensive zone. So it's really hard to create when you're not getting to those areas.
Malcolm Subban had a pretty good game of it, all things considered. Let in 3 goals, had, 31 saves on the evening, but tough sledding.
Well, I mean, tough sledding for that second period. And again, I'm not going to put everything on Malcolm Subban. Those goals, he wasn't getting a lot of help on, and the defense completely broke down, especially that final goal. It was kind of like, oh, darn, we're down 2-0. We're going to go in the locker room 2-0. They didn't realize that there was still 26.7 seconds left to play. Dallas got the faceoff. They charged the net just in force, and it looked like Vegas wasn't ready for that whatsoever.
No, again, none of this can be placed on Malcolm Subban. That was by far his best game as a Golden Knight. And obviously there were some things that he probably would have liked to have done better. Maybe not make as many saves difficult on him as he did. But he kept this team in this game. It could have very well been 6-7-0. It could have been the opposite of what we saw against Colorado with Dallas running away with this one. Malcolm Subban gave his team an opportunity to win this game, and that's all you can ask for from your goalie.
A lot of moving parts last night. We saw some folks switching up on the lines, not just to start the game, but as the game progressed. We got Brendan Leipzig up on that second line with Haula and Neal. That turned into Alex Tuck taking his spot, Ryan, for the third period.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because we were talking about Alex Tuck last night on the post-game show, and you had mentioned that you liked Eakin and Tuck, and you thought that they were noticeable, Lindbergh, mm-hmm. Eakin, and Tuck. And I said, yeah, or Nosek, yeah. I said, no, they weren't. Alex Tuck was noticeable, and the other guys were the beneficiaries of his hard work. And the reason I say that is because when Alex Tuck moved up to play with Haula and Neal, do you remember seeing Eakin and Nosek doing anything of merit again? Not much. They didn't have very many opportunities. They were noticeable playing with Alex Tuck, but they were pretty much absent without him. And so he was the one generating all those scoring chances. He was the one creating for his teammates, and he did the exact same thing with Haula and Neal, much more than Brendan Leipzig was able to do in that spot.
And we saw Alex Tuck up with that line today, Frank, with Neal and with Halla. And the question will be with Tuck is he's generating a lot of chances, Frank, but he's yet to really find the finishing touches around the net.
Yeah, and I mean, I like Alex Tuck. If effort was the key to scoring, Alex Tuck might be leading this team in scoring. But for whatever reason, he creates a lot of opportunities. He's in front of the net a lot. He takes some shots. He's a consummate, hardworking professional out there, but the puck doesn't seem to be going in for him. Then you turn around, you look at a guy like William Karlsson, and Karlsson has been the first one to say he's had some puck luck where things have bounced his way, and he's capitalized on those scoring opportunities. I would love to see Tuck get that proficiency of finding a way to put the puck in the net a little bit more often, because I don't know if anybody works harder out there or does more to give scoring opportunities, but for whatever reason, it hasn't necessarily equated to goals on the scoreboard.
On the defensive side, Lucas Spezza was practicing again today. He had the red jersey off. Coach Gallant, Ryan, said that he is going to make the trip. They haven't yet made the official roster move. But this just released from the Golden Knights that they have signed defenseman Braden McNabb to a 4-year contract extension worth $10 million.
Yeah, that just came down. I'm looking at it right now myself. 4 years, 2.5 average annual value, so the cap hit is pretty manageable, but this is obviously management saying that, Braden, you are a part of the core. You're going to be a part of this team moving forward when we expect to be a playoff contender. So it's a confidence booster, I think, for Braden McNabb, and it's a sign of where this team puts him as far as depth goes and what they see out of him moving forward. So I think it's okay. I think it's fine. I think, you know, Braden McNabb's going to have to get better. He's going to have to continue to get better and not sacrifice his defensive positioning for big hits. And he's going to have to work on some things. But I think this is a very good sign for management to say, we're identifying which players we think are going to be a part of this core moving forward. And I think you're going to start to see more transactions like this as the year goes on.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, when you mentioned the big hits in that. That's certainly one of the things that McNabb is known for. And big hits can be a real positive. They can pump up your bench. They can certainly pump up the crowd. They can demoralize the other team. But sometimes if you do that just for the sake of doing a big hit, you can also leave the other guys on your team hung out to dry a little bit when everybody's back there or they're looking at that, and then there's a rush going the other way because you find yourself out of position for it. And that's that fine line that you're walking all the time when you're doing those kind of hits on the ice. It's great to see, and the crowd loves it, but they don't love to see it if the puck is going in at the other end or if your goalie has to make some kind of Superman save to keep the puck out of the net. So there's a time and place for it. McNabb is very good at it, but you don't want to get caught in that position where you're doing it just to do it and it doesn't serve the proper purpose.
Spezza played very well with Nate Schmidt. Once he went down, Braden McNabb moved up to start playing with Schmidt, allowed Shea Theodore to come in and play with Derek England. We've seen Miller and Hunt remain together. Today at practice, Spezza was skating with Miller, and Hunt seemed to be the odd man out, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I expect Brad Hunt will probably be the healthy scratch along with John Merrill if Lucas Spezza is ready to go in Minnesota. And, you know, it's still an embarrassment of riches on the back end. The Golden Knights still have more defensemen than they probably need to bring with them every single time they go on the road or anytime they're playing a game. And it's really difficult to get John Merrill in. It's difficult to get Brad Hunt in and Shea Theodore and all those different guys that are kind of stuck in that position where You think you know who you have, you think you know what you like as far as your combinations go, but you can't let one of those assets sit for too long, because if you're trying to move them or if you're trying to gauge value, you're not seeing them enough in order to do that. So it's a tough situation for those defensemen. Obviously, they're all professionals and they're handling it very well, but you know, with the signing of Braden McNabb, we can pretty much pencil him in for every game for the remainder of the season. I don't expect a guy that just got that contract extension to be a healthy scratch anymore for the rest of the year.
And that's one of the questions that we probably would have had going into when we start to see some of the trade deadlines. Is Braden McNabb the kind of person that they're going to make a commitment to? And obviously, Frank, the answer is yes.
Well, yeah, they've made that commitment, but we've been asking this since before the season started. What were they going to do with the defenseman? Who was going to blink first? One of the other GMs or George McPhee and trading pieces around? Look at the defensive collapse that they've had in Anaheim with all the injuries they've had. Other teams we've known have needed defensemen out there. So far, George McPhee hasn't made a move just to make a move and get rid of some people. He's waiting for the right opportunity, it seems like. But right now, the Golden Knights do have a riches of defensemen because they are stockpiled in that particular position there. Other teams need it, but up to this point, anyhow, we haven't seen a move. I'm a little bit surprised by it. I know some other people are as well, but I commend George for not making a move just to make a move. If you can't get what you want out of it, then hold on to it as long as you can, because there's going to be more teams down the road that are going to need people as the season goes on and more people get injured and teams get banged up.
Yeah, the embarrassment of riches at defense, but then a little bit leaner we've seen recently on the forward line. Stephane Matteau had to come in. We've had the David Perron injury, which is going to be continually nagging. He's not making the trip. Will Carrier has been out of the lineup as well, and it's caused a shuffle. But the one place that there hasn't been a shuffle, Ryan, has been on that top line of William Karlsson, Jonathan Marchessault, Riley Smith. They had some good moments last night. They did end in the minus category, but you've liked what you've seen from them as of late.
I mean, their chemistry is continuing to get better, and, you know, the guys are good away from the puck. Jonathan Marchessault has really tried to make that a part of his game this year to improve on a 30-goal season last year. And in order to stick and give yourself a chance to get more offensive chances, you have to be defensively responsible. And I think that's something that has helped him. It helped him become the first star of the week last week. It's helped him in his overall game. And playing with, you know, William Karlsson and playing with Riley Smith, two guys that are known for being on the right side of the puck, I think it's helped him as well.
Ryan and Frank were able to catch up with Jonathan Marchessault, and they asked him about being named NHL.com's number one star of the week.
Obviously, it's always fun to get recognized around the league, and I mean, I'm really happy about that. But I mean, our team is playing well, but not as good as we're supposed to our past two games, so we need to clean up some stuff, and we'll be better going along for sure.
Just talk about the chemistry that you have with Riley Smith and William Karlsson. Your line has been carrying play, and it's not just the goals and the assists, but it's everything away from the puck.
Yeah, I mean, we take a lot of pride of playing good defensively, and when we do that, that's when we're at our best, and we get rewarded offensively, so we don't cheat the game. We want to do the right things to help our team win, and I think it's going well so far.
One of the things that I noticed in the Vancouver Canucks game, you came out of the penalty box and you hustled to break up a Brock Besser shot on goal. And I think that was one of those moments where away from the puck, you saw all of the effort that you put in. Can you just talk about that play and just doing the right things all the time?
Yeah, I'm a... That's something that when I was young, I didn't really notice. But when you get older, I think you get more composure and you think the game more. And I think every hockey player needs to have a good defensive side. And when they take pride of that, they can help a team win. And I think everybody is chipping in, and that's why we have success.
First star of the week, how did that feel?
Great. I mean, like I said, it's always fun to get recognized in the NHL for your good moments, and like when you're on a high, you gotta stay on a high, and when you're in the low, is gonna happen. You gotta get out of your low as fast as possible. So just right now is going well, and I want to keep it going.
And talk about the locker room. You guys, we just saw you on the ice. You were joking around all the time on the ice. Is that just something that you like to bring to kind of lighten the mood and make sure that everybody isn't taking themselves too seriously?
Yeah, I'm not a guy that takes a lot of things seriously, so I want to bring another aspect to the rink, more joy, and like people like loose and play with confidence. So obviously I want to help everybody do that, and I think it's just fun to we're winning, so everybody is loose right now. It's fun.
I know earlier we were talking about you working on the defensive aspects of your game. You certainly know how to score goals. Does the team kind of feed off of each other doing that? Because you guys score a goal and you see the knuckle bash like you always do, but it seems like when somebody makes a big block of a shot or a good defensive play like we just talked about you doing before, it seems like sometimes there's even more excitement about that than there is when somebody scores a goal.
Yeah, it's as important. I mean, a big save or a big block or just a regular chip on the board at the right time, it makes it big for us. And that's all the little things that makes us winning and makes us successful. So we got to keep doing that. And I think as a team, we take a lot of pride of playing both ways really good.
That was Jonathan Marchessault reflecting on being NHL.com's number one star of the week. This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, Clayton Hamilton, Frank Harnish, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, and we're now joined by Jesse Granger of the Las Vegas Sun, who just got off the phone with George McPhee, who was speaking about the signing of Braden McNabb. What do you got for us, Jesse?
Yeah, he thinks this is a value deal if McNabb ends up being what they project him to be. And McNabb hasn't been great this season. I'll be the first one to say that. But for $2.5 million a year, that's not much for a starting top four guy at the defensive spot. He's young. McPhee said this is the right time to sign a guy like that. He's at the right age. We think he's going to end up progressing and end up turning into the guy we want. I think it's more about projecting to the future. McPhee said something that I don't necessarily agree with, but he said he's locked down some of the opposing team's top players so far this year, and that the quote that I appreciated the most was they want him to be here for the rest of his career.
And recapping, Braden McNabb signing a four-year, $10 million deal just released today. And Ryan, George McPhee saying that he needs him to get better, which is something you just said about 3 minutes ago.
I did. And this is all, as Jesse said, hoping that Braden McNabb is a top four defenseman. And right now he's not. And can he be? Maybe. But it's going to depend on a lot of different things. He's got to understand his positioning in relation to making a big hit and taking himself out of position. And that's kind of been the thing that Braden struggled with his entire career. He was playing with Drew Doughty for the majority of his time with the LA Kings. That by default makes you a top four defenseman. So where the future is for Braden McNabb, who he's going to be paired with in the next couple of years, who's coming into the organization, what that's going to look like, that's going to determine the value of this particular signing.
And remember this too, what George McPhee said right off the bat. It's not necessarily about this year. The fans are excited about this team, the way they're playing first place. All that's well and good. But McPhee has said right from the start, along with Gerard Gallant and everybody else, this is about 3, 4, 5 years down the road. 4 years, $10 million. That's the game plan that they're playing all along here.
Yeah, and when I talked to McPhee, I brought up that you guys talked about the embarrassment of riches they have on the defensive side. And if you look at those guys, they all kind of fit one mold, and that's the offensive defenseman that likes to jump into the play. You've got Nate Schmidt, Colin Miller, Shea Theodore, Brad Hunt, all these guys that aren't necessarily defensive-minded guys. Like, Lucas Spies is one that is, but mm-hmm. He's an older guy. And I think McPhee sees McNabb, and he said it. He's one of the best defensive defensemen we've got, and I think he wants to make sure he's got one of those guys to pair with. Like Ryan said, it depends on who he gets paired with. He's probably going to get paired with a more offensive-minded player. They've got a ton of those. Mm-hmm. They don't have the guy that can lay the big hit, the guy that can help them stand up to intimidating teams that hit a lot, like the last few games they've played. The Stars came in and tried to bully them around. McNabb's one of the few guys on the team that can stick up for his team.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're looking a couple of years down the road, maybe when Eric Brandstrom is ready to go. Maybe at that point, McNabb is matured enough to know when to jump in and lay in that hit, when to stay back and trust his defensive partner. And that might be a very good thing for a young guy like Brandstrom trying to come in, break into the league, to be paired with somebody that's steady like that. I don't think Braden McNabb is as good as he's going to be right now. Like, he's going to get better. We just don't know how much better he's going to be than he is right now. And that's what George McPhee is taking a chance on.
And one of those things with the four-year deal, as you said, looking towards the future, you don't know how much longer you have a guy like Derek Englund, and they both fill some of that same role. And at $2.5 million, that's a reasonable investment if you're looking to maybe have Englund for one more year and then McNabb playing that role the next two.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that, because when I was tweeting it out, I've already seen the Twitter response. People are not thrilled with this deal because McNabb hasn't played spectacularly so far. But I think that people see the $10 million number and they start freaking out. Oh my God, we paid McNabb all the. It's $2.5 million a year is not that much.
It's spread over 4 years. I mean, that's fine, especially if, like you said, he projects to be a top four defenseman. That's totally fine. Even if he's as high as a top pairing defenseman with the right guy, it's a steal. You just have to hope that he progresses in that arc. And that's, again, that's the question. But that's been the question with his entire team. It was a question with Jonathan Marchessault. Is he a 30-goal scorer, or was last year an aberration? He's starting to prove that last year was no fluke, and that's the type of player that he is.
And this is a great thing to happen on a day like today, because the theme of today is Overreaction Wednesday from the first quarter of the season, and we're going to jump into that after the break. But, Frank, I want to give you the last word on the Braden McNabb signing.
Yeah, I want to throw this in, too. For people that are complaining to you on Twitter or anything else talking about it, sometimes when you sign somebody to a contract and you're putting a couple years down the road, and 4 years is not the end of the world type of contract. It's not like a 8 or 10 year contract like we see a lot of teams doing with guys in this day and age. You have to roll the dice a little bit. Would you rather have them have Vadim Shipishov playing in Chicago right now for $4.5 million, or Braden McNabb, a guy who they see as a viable part of their future down the road, for $2.5 million? You have to roll the dice. That's what they're doing. That's what Vegas is all on. If he becomes the player that they think it is, we might look at this at the end of the 4 years and go, wow, we actually got a steal for this guy.
And let's not forget that the cap is expected to go up over the next couple of years, so that $2.5 million becomes less tomorrow than perhaps it is today. When we come back, it is Overreaction Wednesday. We're going to look around the league and talk about all the things that have happened in the first quarter of the season and get these guys' hot takes on it. You're listening to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, your home for Vegas Golden Knights hockey in the Valley. And welcome back to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton Hamilton along with Frank Harnish, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, and our special guest Jesse Granger from the Las Vegas Sun. A quarter of the season is over, boys, and it's time to look at some of the headlines and the stories and see if it's overreaction or just plain reaction, because that's the reality. We've got a lot to get to, so let's jump right into it. First overreaction, Jesse. The Vegas Golden Knights are going to break the 1975-76 Philadelphia Flyers record for home wins in a season of 36.
Most certainly an overreaction, as we saw last night with Dallas. This team, it's impossible to keep up this pace. Do I think they're going to keep winning at home? Absolutely. I think this team finishes with one of the better home records in the league, actually, especially consider, like, I think their home to away differential will be one of the biggest in the league. They've got a great home arena. It's going to be packed every night, and the Vegas flu helps a little bit too.
How is that possible, Frank? They need to lose less than one game a month in order to break it.
Yeah, but they have 8 games in December, 5 in January, 8 in February, and 9 in March. They could easily lose one game or more a month for the rest of this season. I think that's an incredible overreaction. If they don't get a solid goaltender and have to quit doing everything, they're not doing it with smoke and mirrors. They are a good team, but they're also not sneaking up on anybody anymore. They're not going to break that record. Come on.
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, let's be real. There's no way. The 36 wins at home, that's not happening. Everybody thought they would go 40-1. We saw that's not going to happen. Teams are going to figure out how to win in Vegas. It will happen, but that record is not going to be broken.
Frank Harnish, the Pittsburgh Penguins will be mathematically eliminated from playoff contention by April Fool's Day.
Well, April Fool's Day, it sounds like it's right around the corner, but in reality, there's only 3 more games left in the season. So it is possible, if they don't make the playoffs, that they could be. But this is a team with back-to-back Stanley Cups. They still have guys named Crosby and Malkin there. If Matt Murray isn't done for the significant amount of time, and even that, we don't know what kind of backup goaltending they have. We know that whatever it is, it's better than Antti Niemi, the guy that they thought they had at the start of the season. I don't think Pittsburgh's going to be mathematically eliminated even when the season ends, because I expect this team to make the playoffs.
I, as much as I don't want to do it, I think that if Matt Murray misses significant time, I think that that's a very distinct possibility. I don't know that it's an overreaction. I think they're a tired team. They're too top heavy with Crosby and Malkin. They're not getting enough depth scoring, and that Chris Letang has not looked very good this season. So I think they may be mathematically eliminated by April Fool's Day.
They are 13-10-3, 29 points right now, Jesse, in second wild card position.
Yeah, and I think it is an overreaction, not as much as the first one, but like you said, they're in the second wild card place, and I don't think they're going to play worse. I think this is the worst hockey you'll see out of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and they're still hanging on in that playoff spot. I think it only gets better from here. Matt Murray is going to be out. He's actually played terrible, so I don't know how much of a loss that is. Like Frank said, getting Niemi out there is a huge bonus. You just get him away from your team, and you automatically become a better team. I think the worst Pittsburgh Penguins we see is the sixth seed, so they're still going to be all right.
All right, Jesse, the St. Louis Blues will win their first conference championship in franchise history.
I really like the Blues. I'm one of the bigger supporters of the Blues. I think I love their blue line. They've got the best offensive defenseman in the entire NHL. They've been leading the NHL in goals by defensemen by a huge margin, and that's without Bouwmeester. Now that he's back, it's unbelievable how good they are, and I love their goaltending.
Wait a minute. Did you say they have the best offensive defenseman in the league, and that's not Erik Karlsson?
No. I mean, overall, okay. They have the best offensive group. They've got the best offensive defenseman as a group.
Okay, yeah. I am a vehement non-believer in the St. Louis Blues, but I think that that's pretty accurate. I think that they will win the West.
Break the tie, Frank.
Well, I don't want to call it a complete overreaction because they do have the possibility of doing it, but I think it's a little bit early to be going out there and saying that that's a statement that you're going to make right now because they're only 2 points ahead of Winnipeg, who I think they will finish ahead of. They're also only 2 points ahead of Nashville, and Nashville, once they got rolling last year, they showed how good they are. The Predators are still the team, in my opinion, to beat when it comes out of that conference. They went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year for a reason, because they're a damn good hockey team.
This overreaction has Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace written all over it. Devils rookie Will Butcher will have more goals, assists, and a better plus-minus than Shea Weber.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I hate Shea Weber, so yes.
Will Butcher right now, 2 goals, 16 assists, 18 points. He is a +7. Shea Weber, Frank, is 4 goals, 9 assists, 13 points, and a -7.
I believe he might have 2 of those 3. I think he will have a better +/- He might have more assists as well. But Weber likes to shoot the puck, and he's got a very heavy shot. He'll find ways to get more goals than the rookie. So he might get 2 out of the 3. I don't think he'll get all 3.
I could not agree more. Frank just took the words out of my mouth. Shea Weber with the hardest shot in the NHL. He plays on a team that is going to let him shoot it from the point all day long. They don't have a ton of other weapons, whereas I think the Devils do have more weapons. I think Butcher slaughters him in assists and plus minus. It won't even be close, but I think Shea Weber gets the goals. And for anyone out there that listens to Rink Rats, they know I'm a huge Will Butcher fan. I'm from Denver. I'm a huge DU fan. I like them more than any NHL team. I wanted the Golden Knights to get him bad, but unfortunately they didn't. He's an outstanding player, and he's going to be really good.
And all of those things make Ryan happy because Ryan, yeah. I think Shea Weber might be your least favorite player in the history of the NHL.
Yeah, as much as Jesse loves Will Butcher, that's how much I don't like Shea Weber.
Very nice. Yeah. Frank. Columbus Blue Jacket goaltender Sergei Bobrovsky will win his second of 4 straight Vezina trophies.
Well, first off, we're not sure that he's going to win the second one yet, although he's playing very well, and he's the only one with less than 2 goals a game at 1.92, but he's certainly in the running for it. But second of 4?
Of 4.
Can we pump the brakes? Really? We're not even to the second one yet. This is like somebody saying this is the greatest college football team of all time, and they haven't even started conference play that we seem to see every year. Let's pump the brakes and let things digest a little bit before we go saying second of 4.
That's the nature of overreaction, Frank. Second of 4. Last person to win back-to-backs, Jesse. Martin Brodeur, 2006-2007, 2007-2008 season. And Ken Dryden won 4 straight from 1975 to 1979.
I think it's an underreaction. Bobrovsky's got the next 4 on lock. No. Seriously, though, this guy is so unbelievably good. Now, obviously, Carey Price is kind of the standard for goaltending, and the reason he's so good is because he's so calm in net. He plays the angle so well. Not really the most athletic guy. He's just always in the right spot. Bobrovsky's got some of that, but then he's also got the Dominic Hasek, I'll just lay on my back and flop, and it just happens to be in the right spot. The dude has got a perfect mix of athleticism and intuition with playing the angles, getting the right depth. He's unbelievable, and he's in the prime of his career. There's no reason that he can't be the best goalie in the league for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I think that he can certainly win his second. I don't know about four straight, although if he did win four straight, he'd win four straight without a Stanley Cup because he'll probably be bounced in the first round because he plays, you know, 72 games a year, which is way too much for Sergei Bobrovsky to have to play in order for Columbus to get home ice advantage going into the playoffs. That all being said, clearly nobody asked Tyler Bischoff because it would be Malcolm Subban winning the Vezina this year.
By the way,
every year for the remainder of his career.
By the way, what Ryan says about him playing, he's played 20 of the 22 games they've played.
Yeah, he's certainly
got a lot. It's a high workload.
Hey, heavy workload. But he gets a little bit of help, right? Because we learned earlier that the Pittsburgh Penguins going to be eliminated from playoff contention by April Fool's Day.
Exactly.
So they don't have to go.
It's the Washington Capitals year, everybody.
It is. It's always the Capitals year. Ryan, the hockey guy, Wallace, Frank Harnish, Jesse Granger, Clayton Hamilton going through overreaction here on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. And Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
The Milan Lucic and Leon Draisaitl contracts have destroyed the Edmonton Oilers' ability to be competitive and have thrust them into a five-year pit of misery. Hashtag dilly dilly.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Not the Draisaitl contract, but the Lucic contract is awful. I mean, it's really, really not a good contract because you knew you were going to have to pay Draisaitl. You knew you were going to have to pay McDavid. You knew that it was going to amount to a lot of money. I don't understand the thought process of, before having to do all of that, signing Milan Lucic, who is declining over the course of his career, is not the same player he was in Boston, not even the same player he was in Los Angeles, to a seven-year, $49 million contract. Makes zero sense. I don't understand it. He's got to be moved, and I don't think there's anywhere to move him.
I agree that the Lucic one is the problem. I think it's an overreaction. This team, I still almost am ready to put them in the playoffs this year because they just have so much talent. And the thing is, McClellan should be fired faster than you can say his name if they don't make the playoffs. That dude, he should be on the first taxi out of Edmonton. Gerard Gallant showed us that in Florida. But he has so much talent on that team. You have the best player in the world. How are you losing games? Every time I turn on the TV and Edmonton's getting blown out, I just don't understand how McClellan still has a job. I think Lucic's contract is a problem. The Draisaitl one I have no problem with. He's a great player. He's young. You have to lock those guys up. If you let him go, I mean, you have to pay him that or he's going to leave. And if he leaves, you no longer have the talent. Those type of players you have to lock up. The Lucic one is the problem.
I feel bad for Draisaitl being thrown into this conversation because it is Lucic, without a doubt. He's the problem, in my opinion, as well. And if they go into that pit of despair, I think it'll be from that contract there. They better hope that salary cap rises a little bit so they can maybe offset that and it won't hurt them as much and they can get some other pieces around as well. But right now, seventh place, they are not playing well. The game that they played against the Vegas Golden Knights, probably the best game that they've put all season, that's the type of team that it looks like Edmonton should have night in and night out. That is not the case there. And right now, we know that a lot of it is confidence and everything else in sports. This team right now, I don't know if they believe in themselves. They have arguably the best player in the league. Some people say the second best, and still a youngster that will be the best someday. They should be getting way better results than this, but I don't think it's Draisaitl's fault.
And I think I was like you and expected that win over the Golden Knights to sort of propel them into a couple of weeks of really good play, and it did not. Well, Jesse, it's like you have a crystal ball because overreaction number seven, Washington Capitals head coach Barry Trotz's seat is even hotter than Edmonton's Todd McClellan's.
No. There's no coach in the league that has a hotter seat than McClellan, or at least should. He's been an absolute train wreck of a coach. You cannot lose games with this roster that he's got in Edmonton. Just don't even say anything. Just sit there and watch them play. Let them run themselves like this is a rec league hockey team, and they should still win more games than they are.
You can't lose games with them, yet they have.
I absolutely agree with you. I think when you look at the sum of the parts in Edmonton, and while there isn't as much depth as you would like or has there has been in past years, Jordan Eberle is an undervalued, underappreciated player, and he was for that organization. But when you look at what they still have, what they've gotten Connor McDavid, and the fact that they can't score goals, it's insane. And I don't it's not Connor McDavid not getting better. He's gotten better. You can see it. Leon Draisaitl is very good, not just with the puck, but away from the puck. The guy back checks like a monster. He's probably going to be a player that could contend for the Selke at some point in his career, if not multiple Selkies. And he's got great vision. This team is so incredibly talented, and Todd McClellan has done nothing with them so far this year. If they are still scrambling to find wins at the end of the calendar year, he's got to be fired.
I completely agree. It's an overreaction. Barry Trotz, I don't think he's on the hot seat right now. Maybe a little bit because they've won President's Trophies, but most people, almost everybody that I talked to before the season started, said that they expected this to be a down year for the Washington Capitals with some of the moves they had made. They're actually still in a wild card position right now. They have 29 points after 25 games. Not exactly stellar. They're not going to win a President's Trophy, but then, well, every time they win it, they get knocked out by the Penguins anyhow. If the Penguins don't make the playoffs this year, and they do, who knows? Stranger things have happened. But Trotz, yeah, it would be bad if they don't make the playoffs, and maybe he would be on the hot seat. But McClellan, they absolutely have to make the playoffs. This is a team that people had in the Stanley Cup Finals, maybe even winning the Stanley Cup. If they don't even make the playoffs, how is he not gone?
Well, and like Frank said, Washington's still in a playoff spot, and they're in the toughest division in the entire NHL. Meanwhile, Edmonton would be in last place of the worst division in the NHL if it wasn't for the AHL team, the Coyotes, that are allowed to play in that division. They're in the worst division. They play. There's really no dominant team in that division, and they're still one of the worst teams. They're underperforming way further than the Washington Capitals are.
All right, more overreaction with Jesse Granger, Frank Harnish, and Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace. Alex Ovechkin, Nikita Kucherov, and John Tavares, Frank, will each score 60 goals this season.
Yeah, no, that's a big-time overreaction. Maybe one of them will. Maybe they'll all three be around 50 would be a stretch. 60? Three guys? No way.
I don't think so. I think they do. The NHL,
all three?
I think Kucherov and Ovechkin do for sure. I think they both score 60. They're on pace to score more than that, obviously. They're probably not going to, especially Kucherov, isn't going to be able to keep this up all season long. But I think, especially with the guy he plays with, Stamkos on the other side, that he is going to keep scoring. The Lightning are going to be scoring 5-6 goals regularly, not just once every 5-6 games. They're going to be doing it regularly, and he's obviously going to be the leading guy. The one questionable one is Tavares, because his team's just not as good as those other two guys. But I think he can do it. He's an unbelievable player that's just in a bad situation.
Yeah, I think that if I could see one, and I want to say it's Kucherov, just because of Stamkos, and I think when you're looking at who he's got to play with, that puts Kucherov above Ovechkin and above Tavares. I think Kucherov can do it, and I think Stamkos is going to be probably in the 130-140 point mark for this season if he stays healthy, which is always the qualifier with Steven Stamkos.
Ryan, the Buffalo Sabres, Evander Kane, and Ryan O'Reilly will both finish the season with more goals and assists than Jack Eichel.
Why are we talking about Buffalo?
Because I love Evander Kane.
Well, you know, I think Evander Kane is a pretty good hockey player. I think that when you look at Evander Kane, a lot of what he does well is really allowed because of Jack Eichel. And so I think it's kind of unfair to say that those two guys are going to finish ahead of Jack Eichel as if it's a slight of Jack Eichel. I think having Jack Eichel in the lineup allows and opens up space for those two guys. So I don't know that it's a slight on Jack Eichel, but again, when you look at him as the player, he wants to make everybody else around him better. So I think at the end of the day, if those guys have more points, more goals, more assists, whatever, than Jack, but they start to win games, I don't think it matters to him at all.
Yeah, Evander Kane with 23 points, Ryan O'Reilly with 16, Jack Eichel right now with 19.
I think Jack Eichel has almost double the points O'Reilly does at the end of the season. O'Reilly's not good. I feel like I'm a crazy person when I'm watching Buffalo Sabres games, and people are like, "Oh, O'Reilly's really good. He had a good game against the Golden Knights. He's not good."
When people are talking about him being good, it's not with the puck; it's away from the puck. It's in a more defensive role, but he can chip in. He does have hands. It's more like Nazem Kadri, not so much an elite number one center.
Evander Kane will O'Reilly, no way.
All right, last one. The Boston Bruins will trade Tuukka Rask before the deadline.
I think, I mean, overreaction, no, because it's possible, but I don't think it happens. He's a solid goalie. They still have aspirations of making the playoffs. I don't think they're going to give up on that anytime, like, maybe towards the very end of the year, but I think they're going to consider themselves a possible playoff team, and Rask gives them the best chance for that.
Tuukka Rask, 3-8 with a .291 goals against average save percentage of .899, Frank.
Biggest reason I think it's an overreaction, because you have to get somebody willing to pay $7 million to Tuukka Rask to trade for him, and this cap hit, I don't see anybody taking it for the way he's playing right now.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much what they said.
All right.
I don't see it happening. I don't see it.
Nobody interested in the old Tuukka Rask. Well, that was fun, guys. Thank you for sticking with it and enjoying a little overreaction. Will be fun to check in at the All-Star break and see how much of this is coming to fruition. When we come back, we're going to look at a pretty cool contest that's going on at NHL.com. You're listening to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Fox Sports Radio, your home for Vegas Golden Knights hockey in the Valley. And welcome back to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton Hamilton, Frank Harnish, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, and Jesse Granger from the Las Vegas Sun. And NHL.com's having a little contest on the old website celebrating the 100-year history of the NHL. And they want to know what the best uniform in the history of the National Hockey League is. And I know that Ryan will have a very definitive opinion on this. What is your best uniform, period?
Oh, man. I'd have to say the Montreal Canadiens. I love the colors. I love the simplicity of the design. I really do. I like the Montreal Canadiens. Their sweaters are fantastic.
One of the finalists, or the uniforms they've selected to be in the contest, is the 2017-2018 Vegas Golden Knights.
None of them are going to be better than the Vancouver V.
Oh!
By far the best uniform in NHL history. I love them.
Are we talking, like, when you say best, you mean worst, right? Because
Bell jersey?
Spectacular. The Kings, just so good.
The Kings Burger King jersey then would trump Montreal, hands down.
No, seriously, though, I agree with Ryan. The Montreal Canadiens have great uniforms, and that's why they haven't changed them this whole time. Those Vancouver V's are spectacular. The Golden Knights have good uniforms. I like the white ones better than I do the gray ones at home, but they're a solid uniform.
I sort of have a feeling I know where Frank may be going with his selection.
Well, the greatest sweater or uniform jersey in any sport ever on the face of this planet is Chicago Blackhawks.
Do you like the red one, the black one, or the white one the best?
Any of them, as long as you have the skull and crossbones and everything else that's is up there, cross tomahawks. But cross tomahawks, the Indian head, everything else. It's just it's stellar no matter what colors. Even the green ones for St. Patrick's Day look good.
Can I throw in how do you feel about the old road ones? They would be the home ones now, but the old road ones for the Hartford Whalers, the green with the Hartford Whale, maybe the best logo ever.
Yeah, I love the Hartford jerseys. I like the Buffalo Sabres vintage jerseys with the royal blue. I like blue as a color more than anything, so I'm gravitated toward that. But I even think that the Tampa Bay Lightning, when it was black with the white yoke and they've got the lightning bolt in the front, I thought those were good jerseys too.
Whalers have the best logo in NHL
history.
Yeah,
they do. And an underrated one, though, too, is the old Columbus Blue Jacket alternate with the cannon. The cannon was cool.
Yeah, it was all right.
I'm not a fan of that.
It had the tie. It had the tie, like the Rangers, where you had tied up.
I do like the ties on the jerseys, but not that the cannon. I'm not a fan of.
What? Oh, the cannon's fantastic.
Cannon's for UNLV versus Reno. Okay.
Yeah, that went very poorly for our good friends.
Why do you have to bring that up?
At UNLV. Well, thank you for joining us on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. We'll be back at it tomorrow, 2:00. Catch us. We got the pregame show tomorrow, 4:30, before they play Minnesota. Stick around. TC Martin, the Doctor, is next. We'll